Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece. And in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
I'm Jenna Wortham.
I'm Wesley Morris. We're two culture writers at the New York Times.
And this is Still Processing.
So, a couple weeks ago, the New York Times Magazine put out a story by our colleague and pal, Taffy Ackner, about Goop, which is a lifestyle brand by Gwyneth Paltrow that started as a newsletter in 2008, exploded or
gooped into
a multi-million dollar company.
Enterprise full of conventions, skincare products, cookbooks. I mean, it's just become this huge industry.
Right. And as it's grown into this multi-million dollar industry, these questions around what it is Goop is actually purveying have come up.
Right.
And who is Gwyneth Paltrow to be purveying those things? And what Taffy does in her story is ask questions about the wellness industry as exemplified by a company like Goop.
Right.
And I think a lot about how I can be my best self. I think we're in a moment where there probably isn't an American who isn't also thinking about that. And, you know, since the story came out, a lot of people have been talking about it. It's been on my mind. It's been on your mind. And the question is, what does it mean to center Gwyneth Paltrow?
Right. Like, why is she the avatar of health? And what does it mean for us to map on aspirational ideas of wellness onto someone who is born into a life that could be nothing but wealth? Goop has become a stand-in for what we think of as wellness in this country, or at least that's what this piece is trying to understand, when there are so many other strategies for being well that have nothing to do with the newsletter started by Gwyneth Paltrow.
Well said. And with that,
we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with our conversation with Taffy.
Tumi has a soft side. Discover their new Azra bag collection and its pillowy pleats, satin finish, and crescent shape. Azra is the bag to carry for your 9-to-5 and your 5-to-9 plans that follow. Versatility, after all, is Tumi's signature. Shop the full Azra collection on Tumi.com or at a Tumi store near you.
My name is Thomas Gibbons-Neff. I'm a journalist at the New York Times. I served in the Marine Corps as an infantryman. When it comes to reporting on the front line, a lot of the same basics are at play. You're looking at the map of where you're going. If you're on a paved road, field roads, you know, is there a hospital nearby? Is your body armor affixed with a first aid kit? Does everyone know where that first aid kit is? We arrive into a military position. I get out of the car. I look at my watch. You know, I set a timer, no more than an hour. I'm listening for drones, jets, check in with the team. Is everyone comfortable? And if they are, then we proceed. Frontline reporting is dangerous, but I think nothing is more important than talking to the people involved, you know, hearing their stories and being able to connect that with people thousands of miles away. Anything that can make something like this more personal, I think, is well worth the risk. New York Times subscribers make it possible for us to keep doing this vital coverage. If you'd like to subscribe, you can do that at nytimes.com/subscribe.
When people heard that I was on this story, they all wanted to know what kind of wellness I was talking about. And then I would say, it's a Gwyneth Paltrow story, that wellness, which which
says something,
which some people call rich wellness. And other people call white wellness. And I would Google, what is white wellness? And here is what I found.
Yes.
That there is a Ryan White Wellness Center.
Wait, you mean Ryan White from like the 1980s who was the emblem of AIDS in America?
Who's in your health class videos. Yeah.
But that's not the white wellness that we're talking about.
No, that's just his name.
Right.
It's the first 75 pages. And if you make your way through it, after the 75 pages of Ryan White Wellness Center comes my story.
Oh.
So when I Google White Wellness, now I come up.
And how does that happen?
I don't know, but how are we standing for this thing that we don't fully understand? And when I would get overwhelmed like that in the story, I would just remember that it wasn't really about big wellness. Mm. There are a few paragraphs in there, and that's what happens when you have an 8,000-word story. That to me, it was a story about goop and what goop means mm-hmm. and Gwyneth Paltrow mm-hmm. and what she means. Mm-hmm. And that's always the story to me. Like, what does this person mean in our culture? Mm. And Gwyneth is so interesting to me because she's decided what she means in this culture, whereas she does not really understand. And I actually believe she doesn't understand what she means in this culture. She knows she is something big and triggering, and she does not understand why. Mm. Like, she invited me to her house to show how normal it was.
And I left
absolutely devastated.
Yeah.
I left feeling worse about myself than usual. Yeah. And can I just tell you, the bar, I hang out with celebrities all the time. I'm in their nice houses. I leave in my rental car and I go back to a hotel that's on the Times budget. And I feel sad.
But you know, it's funny because when you put it that way, the sadness is somewhat more professional.
Thank you.
But in the piece, though, you just seem like a glorified woman, like getting closer to the source of something that people aspire to get close to and having a kind of allergic reaction to it.
I don't know if it was allergic. I mean, I think that the reason I always wanted to do this story was because in my stories, you know, there's a lot of controversy about whether or not you should ever use a first person. Mm-hmm. And the only time I really use a first person, even though I'm very specific in my first person, is when I believe that I'm representing the reader.
Mm-hmm.
Like the glorified woman. That's mm-hmm. what you mean, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. That I'm mm-hmm. like standing in for a lot of women. And I feel comfortable doing that because we're all there beneath her. In mm-hmm. the way she exists in our society, the way she's the cipher of something.
And the way women like her have come to be emblematic of some unattainable ideal. And so what does it mean to strive towards that when it's actually impossible? Like you, me, anyone will never be at the goop level.
Right.
And so what does it mean to try to map yourself onto that when she becomes a proxy for wellness?
We should aspire to being well.
Right.
I don't know if we should aspire to wellness TM because that's been co-opted
by
so many people who decide. Like if you ever just visit the hashtag wellness on Instagram, it makes no sense. Everything is
What's
wellness.
There?
Like eat this fruit, go on keto, take a walk. Here is a new funeral practice that I've developed. Like everything is wellness now. Everybody stands under this banner of wellness. So what does wellness really mean? Wellness means advancement in some way, mm-hmm. as opposed to what it was supposed to mean, which is a kind of autonomy of the body, a kind mm-hmm. of like, that's what I think, that mm-hmm. a kind of taking back of your body from your doctor who mm-hmm. only sees you for 7 minutes mm-hmm. and has insurance codes and never looks you in the eye and never touches you anymore. And it means taking it back from women's magazines that tell you can be two sizes smaller in 2 weeks. It's not true.
It's
you cannot be two sizes smaller in 2 weeks. Like, you can't be anything in 2 weeks, in my experience. So
I just want to read along these lines from the piece, your beautiful taxonomy of what wellness is meant to be. And it goes like this. Before we knew it, the wellness point of view had invaded everything in our lives. Summer solstice sales are wellness. Yoga in the park is wellness. Mm-hmm. Yoga at work is wellness. Yoga in Times Square is peak wellness. When people give you namaste hands and bow as a way of saying thank you. The organic produce section of Whole Foods. Whole Foods. Hemp. Oprah. CBD. Body work. Air quotes, body work. Reiki. So is SoulCycle. Acai. Antioxidants. The phrase mind-body. Meditation. The mindfulness jar my son brought home from school.
Oh.
Kombucha. Chai. Juice bars. Oat milk. Almond milk. All the milks from substances that can't technically be milked. Clean anything. Living your best life. Living your truth. Crystals.
I subscribe to all these things.
They're all routine. The original acai line was not acai. It was the fact that you know how to pronounce acai.
Yes, and I'm so
glad that you...
Do.
You came through.
Well,
because I was like a chai. Okay. I mean, there was a very long version of this before there was a reasonable version of this. And Oprah was in there as this kind of counterpoint.
So, speaking of Oprah, Taffy, how do we think about how Oprah fits into all of this? Because she is someone who is larger than life, has a wellness empire, so to speak, of sorts.
Not of sorts. Yeah. She is now a full-on preacher who does a stadium show called Super Soul Sundays. She gave us Dr. Oz.
Right.
She gave us Dr. Phil. And we still have conversations about whether or not she should be president. Right? Like she is still beloved. She is still our hero. She's my hero. I interviewed her last year and nearly dissolved into a puddle of no need to exist anymore. But if you look at them, what's the difference, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I developed an algorithm for it. And it has to do with where you came from and how much visible suffering you've had, meaning how much it has clearly been an obstacle for you to have a struggle.
Mm-hmm.
Are you allowed to have a struggle is the question of wellness, right? I did a few stories about Martha Beck. And Martha Beck says that a shaman will tell you that the people who are destined to be your leaders are people who are traumatized at a young age. They are the people who become searchers. They are the people who want to lead us, which begs the question, what happened to you, Gwyneth? Nothing? Then why are you selling me vitamins? But something happened to everybody, right? Like everyone will tell you that, yes, she's privileged. Yes, she was born into privilege. And we don't generally have a hard time with men who are born into privilege and then go on to do business, right? Or even ask the questions of where did they come from? You know, when I'm sent on a man's story, the question isn't why is he struggling? The question is what's the struggle and how is he dealing with it? Gwyneth was very, very close with her father.
The director, Bruce Paltrow.
Bruce Paltrow, a TV director and producer. And
he died of cancer in like the early 2000s, right?
Died of cancer, I think 2002.
Yeah.
He'd been in remission. And here's like a story that even if you just hear the story, you're so done with her by the time she gets to the sad part. They were in Italy for her birthday, and he was out of remission. And he didn't know it. And he ended up in the hospital, and they put him into a medically induced coma. And he never came out. And he died there. And the first thing you think is, my father never took me to Italy. And the way we celebrate my birthday is that my family tries to remember to WhatsApp me before midnight. And that's all I could think about. But if you sit and you listen to her and you let her be a rich person, right? Like, if you let a rich person be a rich person and you don't resent them for the immense privilege that they come from, then you can hear that here's a woman who was close with someone and who was desperate not to lose him. Earlier, when he had his first bout of throat cancer, she became macrobiotic because she had heard that becoming macrobiotic would be the thing that saved him. And maybe if she showed how easy it could be, she was starting with her father. Look, you could be macrobiotic. You could eat seaweed, and it's just no big deal. He might get better, but he wouldn't do it. And then she thought, you know what? What if I just eat super clean? What if I just eat only organic things and I eat a lot of produce? Maybe he can do that. He still wouldn't do it. He was like determined to live his own life. And that was her struggle. Oprah came from poverty. She was abused. It is a miracle that she was able to navigate herself out of what she was able to navigate herself out of, to not just become Donahue, right? But to become
Phil
Oprah
Donahue,
Winfrey.
By the way.
Thank you. I'm so sorry.
Phil Donahue.
He was America's talk show host, Marlo Thomas's husband, as others of us think of him. and he was this really, really immensely talented guy, but he was no Oprah.
Right.
But Oprah gave us Dr. Oz. Right. If you want to talk about quackery, if like Dr. Oz, Dr. Phil, isn't he under investigation right now?
Yes.
Like,
no, they all are.
And those are people who, I'm not saying that Gwyneth's people are better, but in Oprah's quest for spirituality, she came across some people with some original ideas, people who weren't saying the same thing everyone else said. And that's the same thing Gwyneth has done. And Oprah anoints her. Oprah was on the first episode of her podcast. And if you want to hear the craziest conversation, it's Gwyneth and Oprah in the inaugural Goop podcast talking about what it is like to have so many people watching you, what it is like to have a spiritual quest, and the things that we're talking about go unanswered. But you're so rich, but you were born rich. And, you know, it was more of a like a conversation between equals about how people criticize you.
When I first started talking about spirituality, remembering your spirit, we had a little segment on called Remembering Your Spirit, because I was just trying to give people little doses of it. And I remember doing a show with Carolyn Mace, who wrote The Anatomy of Spirit. And in the middle of that show, I'm watching the audience, and I use the audience to gauge the larger world audience. And I can tell who's listening, who's not listening. And I could tell the people had just zoned out. And so I stopped the show, stopped the taping, and said, "Hey, hey, 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 are you still with us?" And a woman stood up and said, "No, no, we're not. What are you talking about, spirit?" This was 92.
Wow. Oprah discusses the first time she brought up the word spirituality and the crazy letters that ABC got when she mentioned the word spirituality. Spirituality is a word we use now. The thing you could say about Oprah is that she opened the door for Gwyneth, right?
Yep.
And that
yep.
they're in the same airport lounge smoking cigars over this.
But the thing I always come back to, though, is as someone who is deeply invested in this world of wellness, you know, Goop sells these B vitamins for $90. They're just B vitamins. They just sell a box of B. And I just feel like Oprah has never done that. I mean, she upsells stuff via her favorite things, but she's never taken something that is or could be or should be, if that's even a thing, very readily available. Like, you could go to Duane Reade and buy this exact same thing for one-tenth of the cost. And that's part of the reason that Gwyneth, I think, drives people crazy via Goop. It's not
it's
just
an e-commerce business.
Yeah.
It's a business.
Well, it's a business built on an imaginary inflation of something that seems special because she's anointed it.
Right. If you call the vitamins the mother load, and I had a baby and I am so tired, this must be for me. You know, they are very sophisticated in their technology. They look at what people are searching through their website and they're like, here, let's do that.
Yeah.
They have someone who will, if you spend enough time on Goop, there's someone who will email you and say, can I help you with something? Like, it's like this brick and mortar of a website that someone will come to you and say, I see that you are really into face oil. Can I make a recommendation for you? But you're right. Like, I do think Oprah sells things. I think Oprah has the luxury also of having had this platform, an hour-long show on network television before cable really blew up. She was a savior to people. And I think that the thing that overlaps with Gwyneth there is that Gwyneth is a kind of savior to the amount of people who say, I have this funny taste in my mouth and no doctor can tell me what it is. I have this twitch in my eye and nobody can tell me what it is. And who can resist someone who will then look you in the eye, give you his cell phone number for whenever you have a question and say, trust me, I'm a doctor, or trust me, I'm not a doctor, and say, I've done the studying. I know what this is. Let me help you. I can tell you all the times in my life where I've been through something awful and I've done things. I used to live in LA and I had a very traumatic birth of my older son. And afterward, I was so out of sorts that I went to everyone I knew and I said, what should I do? Like, what's the answer to how terrible I feel. And some people told me to take B vitamins, and some people told me I was dehydrated, and some people told me to take antidepressants. And some people said, you should go to this body work person. You should go to this cranial sacral therapy person. And I did it all because I had this baby. And by the time he came online, I wanted him to not have someone who was crying all the time. Yeah. And I went to this woman who was a body work person. And I remember lying there on my back. And she said, oh, I see what the problem is. You still have too much anesthesia in your body.
Oh, whoa.
She didn't touch me once. She took the anesthesia from right 6 inches above me. And as if she was pulling it out of my body and throwing it out, that's what she did. And I left and I felt so much better. And I don't know why I felt better, but I have a feeling it's because she was the first person to not dismiss me after 7 minutes. She was the first person to not look at me and say, you have postpartum depression, which maybe I did. I mean, I was later diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder. And then there are people like that who just have a lot of shame about what your diagnosis is, about what your illness is, about the fact that you're supposed to be so happy that you had this baby. And in the middle of the night, when you are not happy, there's the internet for you.
Yeah.
Someone on the internet will help you. The doctor won't help you. The doctor who has probably seen this a lot of times.
Yeah.
But the internet is there. And Gwyneth has corralled a group of doctors who've said, what you have is real. And that is so powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That affirmation and that validation, I think, goes a long way towards speaking to a really broad category of people, namely mostly women-identified people who go to medical professionals in like a Western medical system and have some condition that they're told isn't real,
right,
or is this other thing, or they're misdiagnosed or not even considered. I mean, there's so much about women's pain and emotional health that isn't even studied. Even like Prozac, I was talking to a science reporter who was saying all the long-term studies on something is that's been around as long as Prozac has only ever been studied on men, long-term effects. So like the way women are ignored by the medical industry, let alone anyone else on the gender spectrum, right?
Right.
So just to have an industry that's
so
saying
true.
Your pain is real
yeah.
is so seductive.
Or even like take Prozac. The fact that it will make most women gain weight and lose their libido is not a problem
for
a doctor
prescribing
it.
They're like, well, you know.
So I have a question though.
Yes.
Because that's not how I felt reading your piece.
How did you feel reading my piece?
I felt like, while you very much make clear that everything you guys are talking about in terms of being acknowledged and having these sort of personal anatomical mysteries at least acknowledged as being valid and probably solvable in some way, what I felt while you were there in Gwyneth Paltrow's world as a spectator was that wellness was actually making you feel bad.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the other side of it.
There's
the thing I just said is the answer to, if this feels bad, why do we keep coming back at it? Because there are enough women in your life who have been made to feel good about it that you're like, take me with you. And on an average day, the only wellness protocol I can really follow is that I floss. I floss, like that's what, and I do that.
Well,
and
that's
I say,
a really strong bonus protocol.
It is.
Most people don't ever floss.
This is extra.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not supposed to be, but sometimes you can only brush your teeth.
Yeah.
And then sometimes I'm like, I'm going to take good care of myself today. I'm going to floss. Mm-hmm. And most of the time, I leave feeling this way. I've had some water. I've flossed. I avoided coffee because I'm trying to get off coffee and I feel like it doesn't do me any favors. And then the minute I get out into the world, I am faced with everything that everyone else is doing. The fact that most people are exercising regularly, and I don't understand how they're doing that. And the fact that people can afford, you know, who knows what people are doing with their money? Who knows how much debt they're in? But the fact that people are prioritizing themselves is heartbreaking to me because I don't even know how to prioritize myself. Is prioritizing my children the thing I'm supposed to do? It's because I know I feel bad about what kind of mother I sometimes end up being. So is that the thing I should do? Is prioritizing myself as a worker so that I could help support my family? Is that what I'm supposed to do? But you can't be surrounded by it. I mean, some people at the wellness summit that I went to, the Goop Health, they went there and they were like, this is all amazing. I feel so much better. And my reaction was the same. I feel so much better. And it did not survive the trip to the airport. It couldn't survive it because it can't exist. And every time you level up in it, you unlock a new dimension of it where you meet someone who has her own colonic room in her house, and you're like, well, I don't even know where to get a colonic where I live.
Or should I even get one?
And where does that leave you?
But is that's like the inherent tension, though, that I felt that lay below the surface of this piece, though, which is what happens when something that every person should be, quote, entitled to or have some relationship to is industrialized, is turned into a commercial business, is gentrified. Because a lot of the stuff that goes on at these types of conventions too is pulled from, you know, more indigenous practices anyway, and then sort of recast and like upgraded and sold. And, you know, it's like, it's always strange to me when these things that we really should have in our daily lives are treated as like so completely distant and out of reach and overpriced. Like, they're just very difficult to even access.
She addresses that. Well, first of all, she doesn't think that the things she sells are so expensive. She knows that there are certain things, but she doesn't think that a $90 moisturizer is expensive. And to a certain population, it isn't. But she says it in the piece, like, what's the problem here? Go eat some produce. Go, like, that was a thing people constantly said to me. Like, you're complaining about the fact that you don't have time to do this, and yet you're not willing to put any time into it. And I thought, maybe that's true. And Gwyneth says to me in the story, just drink some water. Like, listen, how about you start here? Drink some water. Eat a salad. How about not even a salad? Eat an apple and see if you feel better. And I'm so resentful at the implications of all of it that the way I barely make my life work is still not working, that I have a nervous breakdown about it, as you see in the piece. What's your reaction?
Well, it's hard for me because the picture of wellness is so tied up in someone like Gwyneth. And I actually love Gwyneth. Like, I'm not one of those people that think she's terrible. Like, I kind of really love her life. I love that she named Apple Apple. Like, it made me so happy. Like, I think it's hard because Gwyneth's co-option of what now is being represented as a type of wellness aesthetic or industry or lifestyle is really helpful to a lot of people. But because it's Gwyneth, and because Gwyneth is already this object of ridicule, and because of the way it is distorted through the lens of Goop in that you get $90 B vitamins, it becomes something that's very easily dismissed and easily seen as frou-frou or woo-woo or silly.
Do you think it's bad for the cause?
No, I don't think it's bad for the cause. I think it's bad for people who actually need those things, who feel like they're not, it's not accessible to them because this is the way it's refracted. I think for people who this has always been useful for, I think particularly communities of color, communities of non-binary people, non-gender conforming people who understand what it really means to have a wellness routine and need wellness as a means for survival and not leveling up and not, it's not aspirational for large swaths of the community, or it's just like inherited. You know what I mean? Like, one of the relationships that I have to wellness or like herbal medicine or plant medicine is my mother, who is white, grew up very rurally in Southern Virginia, and they were too poor to go to the doctor. So they had, you know, a local person growing herbs that they then took. So it was born out of necessity. So like, my relationship to that will never be shaped by someone like Gwyneth or Goop. So I don't think it's bad for the cause. I think it just kind of makes me feel tense because I don't like the way that practices that are integral to me are easily written off as nonsensical because of the way they're represented through things like Goop. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. I feel the same way about the things that I do, you know, in the times where I've gone to meditation as an emergency to hear about it from people who heard about it from the guy who does like the 4-hour work week and is like, meditate so that you can be a millionaire.
Yeah.
Like, those are like, I get it. Yeah. I also come from a community in very poor Hasidic communities. Like, you know, my family is ultra Orthodox, although they don't like that term. But part of being ultra Orthodox means you don't listen to podcasts. So they'll never know. And there is a huge part of that population that does not have health insurance. And there are old women in the community who tell you that if your joints hurt, stop eating tomatoes. And that's not different than what it says on Goop. So I don't know.
So what does all this stuff look like now? I read a report that basically said that at some time around 2016, after the election, the search for the term wellness, or maybe the term self-care.
Mm-hmm. Was both, actually. Escalated. Spiked.
Through the roof. And I think that it's really fascinating to think about what we need in the performance of not only wellness, but care, self or otherwise.
Hmm. I think Goop is trying very hard to represent wellness, but I think that it is doing the same thing it does when you're searching it and they say, hey, do you want some face oil? They're looking to us to see what we want. Mm. I remember that amazing New Yorker piece Gia Tolentino wrote about skincare, right? Mm-hmm. Like that resonates to me too. That, like the reaction to that is now here's where you buy it. Gwyneth would tell you all she's doing is linking to the product, which is a little different.
Right.
But I think that we are desperate and scared and sad. And I think that we don't trust anyone anymore. And we are in this amazing way, not like a sad way that is now to me an amazing way, trying to build our bodies to be more independent of other people, to become stronger. But I think we're tortured by all this stuff. The kind of passive postmodern stream of information we're getting just by looking at social media, which was supposed to be just pictures of my cousin in Toledo, it's become something different, but we've been trained to not look away. And so the question is, what is wellness? How can we take care of ourselves now? Sometimes taking care of yourself means shutting off Twitter. I remember when all of the Me Too, remember when it was like twice
every
a day?
Yeah.
It's like, maybe you should just shut this off because it is becoming impossible to be a woman in this world. It is becoming impossible to feel like you have any agency. I think that the lessons of what's been going on in the last 2 years are that we thought we came so far. And there are a lot of people who want to make it clear that we haven't.
But why is she so triggering? Like, why is that so triggering for them, do you think?
She's always been.
When she was an actress, she wasn't. And I think that there is something to the fact that the minute a woman leaves the thing that she was supposed to be doing and does something else, I think that really makes people angry. When a woman says, I have the answers, even though I've never had any of the questions, that makes people angry. Mm. And I think that we imagined that she is so perfect, that she has never had a struggle. And what she is trying to say is that she has. And it's all much easier to answer than we think it is. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people disagree with that. Mm-hmm. And some of them are in this room. Yeah.
The new Starz series, Mary and George, starring Julianne Moore and Nicholas Galitzine, tells a story almost too outrageous to be true. But shockingly, it is. With next to nothing to her name and looking to elevate her social standing, Mary Villiers sets her handsome and charming son George on the path to seduce King James I and become his all-powerful lover. The show is full of wit, scandal, action. You won't be able to look away. Watch the season premiere of Mary and George now, only on Starz and the Starz app.
My name is Thomas Gibbsneff. I'm a journalist at the New York Times. I served in the Marine Corps as an infantryman. When it comes to reporting on the front line, a lot of the same basics are at play. You're looking at the map of where you're going. If you're on a paved road, field roads, you know, is there a hospital nearby? Is your body armor affixed with the first aid kit? Does everyone know where that first aid kit is? We arrive into a military position. I get out of the car. I look at my watch. You know, I set a timer, no more than an hour. I'm listening for drones, jets, check in with the team. Is everyone comfortable? And if they are, then we proceed. Frontline reporting is dangerous, but I think nothing is more important than talking to the people involved, you know, hearing their stories and being able to connect that with people thousands of miles away. Anything that can make something like this more personal, I think, is well worth the risk. New York Times subscribers make it possible for us to keep doing this vital coverage. If you'd like to subscribe, you can do that at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Okay, we are back. And I am back with a little more sympathy for Gwyneth Paltrow than I thought.
Surprisingly,
I was
going to
have. Agreed. And, you know, listen, I am saying this as somebody who believes that when she was at the height of her acting success, mm-hmm. she was one of the best actors of her class of actors, male or female.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'd say Gwyneth Paltrow and Cate Blanchett, who were mm-hmm. on The Ascent mm-hmm. at the exact same moment.
Hmm. Oh, wow.
I think some of the sympathy that I have has to do with what we were talking to Taffy about with this trauma and these sufferings. And, you know, on the one hand, there's what happened with her father, Bruce Paltrow.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also what happened to her with Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah.
We don't really know a lot about it. And we don't know as much as we know about some of the other women that he assaulted.
Right.
But it seems to me that it's bound up in her Oscar win and what he allegedly did to make that happen. She wins the Oscar for Shakespeare in Love in 1999. And before she wins the Oscar, all that was really happening to her in at least a third of her movies were people trying to kill her.
Right.
Michael Douglas tries to get her killed in A Perfect Murder.
Uh-huh.
The year she wins the Oscar, Talented Mr. Ripley comes out.
Right.
And Matt Damon tries really hard to knock her off in that too. What happens to her in Seven?
I know.
You know,
oh my
the
gosh.
Most famous decapitation of all time.
Spoiler.
Sorry.
It's been forever. It's fine.
But then she wins the Oscar,
mm-hmm.
and she goes from people trying to kill her in movies to her trying to kill herself.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I'm talking in everything from playing Sylvia Plath in Sylvia
mm-hmm.
to playing this country singer in Country Strong, which is not a bad movie. she was manic depressive and, you know, suicidal depressive in movies like Royal Tenenbaums.
Right.
And Proof. And Two Lovers,
uh-huh.
where she dated a suicidal guy.
Oh, that's right.
But was kind of depressed and a little bit of a junkie herself. And so you think about something like Sliding Doors, which is a movie about a woman whose life could have gone one direction or another direction.
Right.
And she plays out both.
Yeah.
And the movie sort of makes a choice for her.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. The career itself, the acting career as a metaphor or as an explanation for how you wind up with a woman who might have felt like she had no agency as an actress, where you're being told what to do all day long, partially fueled her interest in taking another skill she had and doing something with that. I don't know.
No, it's completely interesting because it kind of recasts her interest in doubling down on Goop as a strategy for her own type of wellness. It's an escape mechanism. It's a coping mechanism. And I think, you know, it just gets a bit distorted when you realize it's more of a business philosophy than it is necessarily a life strategy.
Yes.
I mean, she's trying to find another way to be Gwyneth via selling people things that they, I don't want to say that they don't need, but things that they don't need at that price point necessarily.
Yes. It's centered around positivity. And her honest belief, as Taffy said, that she really does have the solution to your problems. Or she knows a link.
Guess what the Goop cookbook is called?
What?
It's All Easy.
Oh, Gwyneth.
I mean, to her it is.
I think that we just have a sense of wellness being about spending and commodification. And it really doesn't have to be about that.
Yeah, I think there's a way in which, because Goop has become a stand-in for what we think of as self-care and wellness and caretaking, it can feel like an indulgence. But for a lot of people, myself included, and yourself included, actually, knowing what I know about you, it's not a fad, actually. It's a way of living that is predicated on a sense of well-being that has nothing to do with items you buy in a store.
Mm-hmm. And it makes all the sense in the world in some ways that people like Oprah and Gwyneth Paltrow are avatars for answers
mm-hmm.
and expertise. And, you know, guides to point you in these other directions to get yourself better. But I also do think that the answer is also kind of in you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Not to be too Chaka Khan about it, but it is all in you.
It is. It's going to vary per person. And you just got to figure out what it means to you.
I do like an expensive skin cream, but I also
love your expensive skin creams too. I use them at your house.
But I also like walking home from work when it's nice out once a month too.
I like sending and receiving voice notes to my friends.
Yeah.
And in the words of our good friend GP, it's all easy.
That's our show.
Still Processing is a product of the New York Times.
It's produced by Nina Potok.
Our editor is Sasha Weiss.
We get editorial oversight from Lisa Tobin and Samantha Henning.
Our engineer is Jake Gorski.
And our theme music's by Kindness. It's called World Restart from the album Otherness.
An extra special thanks to Taffy Ackner for joining us on the show.
Thanks, Taffy.
You can find all of our episodes and various things at nytimes.com/stillprocessing.
And if you're down, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and tell your friends and your neighbors and your uncles.
Your cousin, your mom, and everybody. My name is Jenna Wortham, and I'm not ashamed to admit that I was an early Goop newsletter subscriber. Like, I got the spaghetti recipes, and I even made my own spinoff with a friend called Bloop. That was just the black version of Goop.
Always something new. Oh, my God.
Keep you guessing. I keep you on your toes.